Well, hello and good morning. Welcome to the Words, Women, and Wisdom Show. If you've not been on this show before, this is a live show streaming from BBS Radio in California, which syndicates to over 100 stations globally. I'm your show host, Yvonne E.L. Silver, and my mission is uplifting the spirit of humanity. And I know that sounds like a massive mission, and I do it by showcasing amazing women. A lot of times it's women who have risen from tragedy to triumph, from some point of confidence to chaos, risen to success, and are now making a huge contribution to their community and globally. And today I'll introduce my guest, Peggy, in just a moment. Peggy didn't necessarily have a point of tragedy. Her life is very unique, and she's going to share her incredible story and where she's at today. So, for myself, as a female founder, an entrepreneur, a certified executive coach, and a chartered HR professional, I've helped literally thousands of people to find excellent career choices, evolve their business, in particular in the past 10 years, supporting senior women to excel in their leadership and especially in their confidence. So today I'm thrilled to be working with women entrepreneurs and leaders to help them flourish in business, which is expanding their team, engaging their team, growing their business with ideal clients for more sales and a sustainable business that is fun. I believe we can have balance as female entrepreneurs and be great role models for our children. So I bring to you intriguing guests, and I'm delighted to bring to you today one of my new friends that I met actually at the Evolutionary Business Council retreat just in January, Peggy O'Neill. Now, as a formal introduction, Peggy is an inclusion and empowerment strategist. She's a corporate diversity trainer. She's an inspirational speaker and author. I'm so thrilled to have her on the show. And over the past 15 years, she's been sharing her unique story, all of the trials and triumphs of being a little person who's inspiring others to open their minds and hearts to differences and to overcome their own challenges too. She also educates women in particular and people in minority groups to find their voice, to speak well, and as she says, walk tall. So from the soaring height of 3'8", Peggy has triumphed over a mountain range of challenges. Coming from the field of psychotherapy, Peggy draws on the wisdom of her unique life experiences and her lifelong training in the areas of empowerment, diversity, and awakening. So throughout her speaking career, Peggy has the pleasure of presenting to a number of high-profile companies such as FEMA, Chase Banks, DiversityWorks, Texaco, EPA, and many, many others, as well as inspiring over 100,000 students in anti-bullying practices. She's also found time to co-author, sorry, to author five books and celebrates her daily life in Ojai, California. Lovely place to be. Welcome, Peggy.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah. So glad that you could be here. And it's so lovely to be joining you right now. I'm actually looking out of my window and it's snowing here in Calgary, Alberta, at the base of the Rocky Mountains. So I imagine it's a lot warmer where you are.
Yes, I could take a walk outside in my bare feet right now.
Yeah, and it's got such lovely energy in that part of the world. In fact, I think it's famous for that energy, isn't it?
Yes, and I've heard a spiritual teacher say that this is a creative vortex that actually infuses the manifestation that comes out of Hollywood. So it's like
Yeah.
the energetic creativity gets somehow stirred up here, and then the people in LA embody that, and then they make all of those amazing movies and influence worldwide consciousness.
Yeah,
It's pretty cool.
so interesting, and I am trained in Reiki, so this whole piece about awakening consciousness, energy, strong interest of mine. So you have a really interesting background and a very unique story of rising from being small in stature to larger in larger than life in your confidence. So let's begin with telling me a little bit about your life growing up, and you know, what were some of the challenges?
Sure. Well, I just want to make sure that everybody heard that I'm an adult and I'm stand 3 feet 8 inches tall. So I'm about the height of a 5 or 6 year old. So I came in to this lifetime in taking on a big challenge around, can I be different and be okay? Mm. And I feel like that has been sort of the nonstop knock on my door, because there's so much reinforcement of just the opposite. And it started, I would say, there was issues in my family. Of course, I came from an average size, very image-oriented family. And I'm not going to go into all the details, but my mom had postpartum, and you know, it was a lot for her to recognize that she had a child that was far from the tree. And so, and my dad too. So that sort of started this whole thing about, where do I belong? Am I acceptable in my sort of unconscious just identification, right? And how can I, my existence is creating this, you know, this inner conflict for these people that I love the most. So I'd say that the, like, because I've been in therapy a long time, that that's where I could identify sort of the seed of the sort of, I'm going to call it deficient identity, the part of me that believed that something was wrong with me, that I wasn't good enough, that I'm not okay just the way I am. So that was the seed of it. And then it got nurtured and a lot of rain put on it when I went to school. And the kids were, not the kids that I knew, but the kids I didn't know, were calling me names. And the school bus would go by and the kid would yell out, midget, midget, midget. And, you know, I'd have to turn my back and just like completely disintegrate and energetically. And it was awful. And then sports was very challenging. I'm very athletic and I was able to do a lot of sports. A lot of little people can't, but I have, so there's just a little bit LP, I call it LP 101. Mm-hmm. I'll give a look since we have plenty of time. And a lot of people are curious. There's over 200 different types of dwarfism, and they're identified through different bone pattern, like structures in the skeleton, right? Different patterns of skeletal structure. So my particular type, I considered A1. I have no medical issues. I have never been to a doctor for anything that has to do with my short stature, but about 95% of little people do have issues. Hips, joints, spine, all this, a lot of stuff. And also an interesting fact about little people is that 80% of little people have one type of dwarfism, which is called achondroplasia. And if you've ever seen the show Little People, Big World, the mother and the son, Amy and her son, what's his name, Zach, have achondroplasia. Father has a different type, and I don't know what his type is, maybe SED, and I have a different type. But the point is 80% have one type, and then in the other 20%, you get this sort of this like flower of diversity. You get all these different types of little people. It's really interesting. And when you go to a conference where there's all little people, it's like blows your mind because there's so much diversity and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that God is so creative and makes all these different ways that people have this experience being human with greater and lesser disabilities and greater and lesser sense of inner courage and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay. So back to my story. So in sports, it was challenging because I could run, I could jump, I could trampoline, I could play soccer, but like they'd never let me play on the team when that was a game. And I was a competitive ice skater, so I was able to find something that I did well, and that was really a big boost for my self-esteem. And I would say for any parent who has a child who's significantly different, that this was something that my mother did that really helped me a lot, was I found a sport that I loved that I could do without some kind of, you know, disadvantage. Like it wasn't running, it wasn't, speed wasn't the thing, right? So running fast or swimming fast or jumping high or like that, or bumping, you know, crashing into somebody with force. It was about skill and that kind of thing. And we did figure eights back then, back when I was a kid. So I did that, and I did well, and I won competitions, and it was amazing.
Lovely. You know, yeah. I'm so pleased to be hosting this interview. I've learned so much already, even in the first 5 minutes. But the one thing that I was really curious about is this whole topic of being respectful to people of small stature. And you call yourself little people, little person, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I just want to make sure that the listeners caught that, because, you know, obviously we want to make sure that no matter what the inclusion and diversity components are, that we are always respectful and kind. And I think that very often what I've observed, I have a special needs son, so he's now 24.
Wow.
And sometimes people don't know what to say because somebody is different.
Right.
And so they don't say anything. And then that in itself creates this sort of vacuum.
Right.
And I don't know if you've experienced it. I know when we first met, I had this temptation, whether that was natural or not, whether it was received as being respectful or not, but I had this natural temptation to bend down. So I was trying to talk more with you at your level. Is that a good thing?
I find that very helpful, especially if I'm going to have an in-depth conversation. If I'm just like, okay, what's your phone number? Or, you know, something very quick. Yeah. I don't find that that's necessary. I mean, it's not, I don't expect it from people if they feel comfortable, and certain physical agility is required in that situation. You know, that's another consideration. Mm-hmm. So, but when people do, and I am having a, you know, moment of meeting someone and connecting with them, it is much nicer, of course, to be eye to eye. And if they can either sit down or go on one knee, or I can step on a stair or something like that, it makes a connection a little bit more enjoyable, I think, for both of us.
Yeah. And I remember seeing one of the gentlemen at the event. He was down on one knee chatting with you.
Yeah, yeah.
The magician that we saw.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. My good friend. Uh-huh.
And,
yeah, Diego.
Yeah, and for me, because I had nylons on, I was bending down as opposed to kneeling that day. Yeah,
nice. Yeah.
So obviously, when you're first, as you said, you know, when you're first born, it sounded as though it was pretty evident to your parents that there was something very unique about you. Whereas with my son, I didn't actually know. I just thought that perhaps, you know, he had a really large brain, because that was quite an endeavor to, you know, to actually deliver him.
Right.
So right from the first time that my ex-husband learned that we did in fact have a child that had some special abilities, it was, you know, it was very much a case of trying to help other people look at him, because there's nothing evident externally. But once you start talking to him, you realize that there's something unique about his abilities, right? So in your case, I was only 4 pounds, 2 ounces. I imagine you were a lot smaller than that.
No, I actually was 8 pounds. Okay, so here's how it works with little people. So I actually looked like an average size child. I was 8 pounds and 2 ounces. And I didn't want to go into the sort of detailed experience with my family, but now that we're on this topic, I will. I have three siblings. My oldest brother is also a little person. They did not know he was a little person until he was 2 years old.
Oh, okay.
So having gone, and then I have two average size sisters in the middle. And having gone through the experience of my brother, they knew exactly what to look for. So it was slightly evident to an educated eye, but an uneducated eye would not be able to tell the difference.
Yeah.
And I've seen the child. I have two little people friends, Sherry and Lee, and when their son was young, I mean, for the first year and a half, I was like, who knows? Is the branch going to go to the right, or is the branch going to go to the left? Is the kid going to be tall, or is he going to be small? Nobody knew.
Yeah.
So,
well, 8 pounds. Wow.
And then there's kids, the type that has 80% achondroplasia. Those children, it's pretty evident right when they come out, and they weigh a similar amount. So the way that it works with little people is that from gestation, the growth goes normal for about the first 2 years, and then it starts to slow down.
Mm. So tell me a little bit about yourself today, because obviously this isn't something, you know, very often I'm interviewing women who have gone through some sort of tragedy and now they've come out the other side of it.
Yeah.
And now they're, you know, helping to pay it forward to society by teaching what they learned on their journey. Now, your journey to getting to the success that you are right now obviously is quite different, because it's not something that you can heal or grow out of per se. So
no, I can't
about where you're at today.
I can't change. And just to sort of make explicit what you were saying earlier about distinguishing, I like to, when I talk about differences and celebrating differences, I like to, diversity and inclusion, I like to also to make the distinction between visible differences and invisible differences. So mm-hmm. It sounds like your son at some point in his life, I don't know if it's still true, had an invisible difference. And at the beginning of my life, it was rather invisible, probably to most people, but maybe not my parents, but it was for my brother. And right. then and then after I was, I don't know, 4 or 5, it was a visible difference. And so, and depending on the attunement of the person to when they figure that out. Anyway, I really didn't finish my challenges. I only sort of scratched the first surfaces on that one. So I'm not sure whether I want to talk about how I've overcome, because I haven't really painted the picture of what. So I can do those. I can do it in like 2 sentences, which is to say that besides those things as a young child, I did well in school. I had the mental quickness and I have a strong mind. So that was very helpful. Mm-hmm. And I have an agile body, strong body. So that was helpful too. I could go to camp and do a lot of average stuff. I was mainstreamed, of course. So not of course, but I was. And then, but when I got to be a teenager, I ran into really probably the biggest problem of my life, which is this romantic inequality. And mm-hmm. I would be attracted to people that were attractive to me, just like everybody else. And I would go through the process of developing friends with those people, and they would be very friendly with me in response because I'm a very lovable person. And then there'd just be this big wall, and there was, I didn't get asked on the date. I didn't go to the prom. I didn't get to meet the parents. I didn't get engaged. None of that happened for me. And it went on all the way from, the pain of it sort of started when I was 15, and it went on. I met my husband not till I was 40 years old. And I did engage with Little People. I joined Little People of America when I was 25. And I did have some dating experiences there that I call on equal playing field. Right? There wasn't that sort of prejudice that was in the air, a stigma about, oh, I'm marrying somebody or I'm dating somebody who has this significant difference that people stigmatize and think something's wrong with her when actually she's just a unique creation. And people look through their glasses of projecting their own deficiency onto you, and you take that on as your identity. So this is the thing that I've woken up to. For a long time, I thought it was me that there was something wrong with. And now I understand that it's just a projection from people's own unconscious and that their shortcomings, right?
Yeah.
So that's what been one of my big successes, I would have to say, is coming to a place of not taking people's ignorance personally and being able to realize inside of myself the essence of who I am, my deeper self, my more spiritual divine self, which is a beauty beyond words that we all have. And I recognize that. I've written that one of my books called Little Square Head is about a girl with a square head, and she the kids tease her and blah blah blah. She goes into the woods and she's crying and she says, I'll never have any friends. And then the water is magical and it speaks to her, and they say, well, come and look at your reflection. And when she does, she sees a big diamond in her heart. And but she says, what's that? And the water says, this is who you truly are. And if you continue to see yourself in this way, you'll receive 3 priceless gifts. And then she receives the gifts of courage, confidence, and compassion.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. And And that is my own life put into a fairy tale. And I did have a very significant, I was in a Fisher Hoffman, it's like this big 6 month long, hugely therapeutic thing around your difficult experiences with your parents in the early part of your life. And one night I had these pillows and punching and, you know, this cathartic whole situation. And it was great. I loved it. I mean, it was embarrassing, but at the same time, it was so freeing. And at the end of my third round of 45 minutes punching, I laid down and there was this diamond that I saw. I had my eyes closed. The diamond was generating from my heart and it was bigger than my whole body.
Wow.
And when I sat there and it was like the only thing I could see. And the feeling of it was so significant. Like, just, there was no denying that it was there. It was more real than my body, kind of thing. And in the silence, I heard the words, "I am a diamond, valuable, precious, beautiful."
And well, you know the story of how diamonds are formed, right?
Yes.
Through intense pressure on the carbon.
So, right, and they also start out with a lot of coal on the outside. It has to be chipped away and chipped away, and that's like our ego, right? Just
exactly.
Like our all of our misconceptions about ourselves, they have to be cleansed and washed, and eventually the veils go away, and then we're left with this incredibly radiant, effulgent self. And when you come from that, nobody can stop you.
Absolutely not. So courage, confidence, and the last one.
Compassion.
Okay. Yes. Well, as you can tell from my book title, I love repetition, right? Words, woman, and wisdom.
Illiteracy. Alliteration.
Alliteration, yes. So yours is courage, confidence, and compassion. Well, you definitely demonstrate that. When I first met you, I mean, you were oozing that. I could feel it. I could feel that there was a story. And I was looking forward to the opportunity to have a little bit of time hearing more about your journey and some of the challenges. So what are some of the surprises about how people respond to you and in your work helping groups understand diversity and inclusion, how they respond to you during your sessions?
Okay, so it's two different questions. So I'm going to do them separately, okay? Because there's people in public, and then there's people in the session, right? So in public, I'm not on a stage. I'm not wearing a suit. I'm not, like, my hair is not done. Like, you know, I might not look so professional. And people will very easily, consciously or unconsciously, and I think mostly it's consciously, project onto me something's wrong with her.
Mm.
Or there's a sense of shock, there's a sense of fear, there's a sense of unfamiliar, it's not safe. So that's all happening, that's what happens with adults. Okay, kids, and then they mask it with a tight smile or a nod of the head or some kind of like that. And the more sort of, I would say, mature and aware the group that I'm with, the less I deal with that.
Right.
And I have learned over time to gravitate towards the more mature and aware groups so that I don't have to deal with that shit. So, sorry. and then with kids, it's like a whole cornucopia of responses, all the way from shock and disbelief to awe to pointing and laughing to, "Mom, look at that little look at that person," to somebody like responding to me like a freak, to kids being, and nowadays, especially since my friends Matt and Amy have the TV show Big Little People, Big World, much more now, it's like I'm a fairy person. I'm like a special, like now kids respond to me, not all kids, but a lot of kids much more nowadays respond to me like, "Wow, this is an amazing, like, this is an unusual experience, and aren't I lucky to be having it?" And I want to tell a story about one time I was in an elevator in New York, and I was going to a workshop, and I was with Robert Holden. I don't know if you've ever encountered him, but he's a hero and a good friend.
I love him, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a good friend of mine, and we had done a meditation on the heart the day before, and he asked us to go in our heart and, like, listen and see all this stuff. So Next day, I'm in the elevator all by myself, and the door is open, and there's three kids in their eyes. One, two, three. Right straight across from me. So it was like a four-year-old, a five-year-old, and a six-year-old. And I was like, every cell in my body went, ah! You know, this is not a safe situation. And then it's not being with the mom, they were with the dad, even more unsafe situation. And I thought we were on the ground floor, so I tried to sneak out, and I stuck my head out of the elevator. I saw we were not on the ground floor. I had to get back in the elevator again. My stress level was like, oh! And as we're in there, and I'm tense, they're tense, everybody's tense, the dad is tense. And then I go in my heart. I did the Robert Holden exercise. And all of a sudden, I opened my eyes, and I looked at the kids, and I said, have you guys ever met a little person before? And they all shook their head. They're completely quiet. Their eyes are like as big as saucers. And then I said, well, your lucky day. And everybody laughed. And then we started talking about the day and where they were going. And it just completely shattered the whole craziness. So yeah. there is some, this is one thing about how kids respond and how then you respond to them is also very important. And it also is a great teaching about the wisdom of the heart, that we don't just get information from the head. We also get information from the heart. And when you ask me what are some of the things that people can do to be more kind, I would always say move from your head to your heart, because the head sees differences, it discerns, it dissects, it compares. And the heart, its thing is unity. Its thing is connection, sameness. What are our commonalities? How can I connect with this person? So when, and it has it, our heart has its own wisdom, our belly has its own wisdom. So when we can go to that place of wisdom in our heart, we can respond in the situation in a way that can be much more healing and much more provide a breakthrough for both us and the people that are with us that are in difficulty. And that story is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm certainly, you know, reflecting back when I was watching the Power of the Heart movie, you know, how the heart, we always think it's the brain that tells the heart what to do, and how the examples that they showed of what happens when the heart sees something and then tells the mind how to respond to it. That was an incredible story. So for those listening, if you haven't watched the Power of the Heart movie, highly, highly recommend finding that. Also, what I loved about what you just said is the power of truth. I mean, you know, if you have a stain on your shirt because you spilt coffee, right? I mean, the best thing to do when you're out and about is, instead of wondering whether people are seeing that there's a coffee stain on your shirt, is just draw attention to it, put the spotlight on it right away, and then it dilutes the power of distraction.
Yes. Much
the same as you just did in your elevator example by saying, you know, have you ever met a little person before? I mean, let's not try and pretend that there isn't something unique about how special you are and you're, you know, 6'2", right? Put the spotlight on it and address it, and then everybody can move past it.
Exactly. And it removed the stigma like that, you know?
Exactly.
So what about your experience, Yvonne? How has it been with you with a son with a disability? How do you deal with people's responses?
Well, certainly with Alex, his name is Alex. Mm-hmm. When he was about two, he was able to speak, and yet he didn't speak very clearly. So nobody really understood him. So that was sort of one of their first clues. Mm-hmm. You know, here's a lad that's physically the age that he would demonstrate being, you know, two or three, and yet clearly he's got some challenges speaking. Mm-hmm. So that was the first clue. However, he has this incredible energy about him where we would go into a store, and the store clerk, a lot of times they're women, the store clerk would say, oh, look at him, isn't he cute? And then he would stick his hand out and he would want to buy something. And sometimes I would and sometimes I wouldn't. But on the times when I wasn't buying whatever it was that he was putting his hand out for, invariably the store clerk would say, you know what, let me give it to him. Let me gift it to him. He just had this attraction. It was like a magnet that drew the ladies in. And so that was the pleasurable part. The the not so easy part to deal with was, you know, if you're out in a public spot and your child, no matter what age they are, or even as an adult, they're having a seizure, very often people around you do not know what to do. They don't know whether it's going to last a long time. They don't know if you need an ambulance. They don't know how to handle it, what to do. They're freaking out. They're trying to bombard you with questions. And what you really want right in that moment is right. to be concentrating on what your child needs. And you don't want to have to be deflecting people around you who are asking somewhat crazy questions in many instances.
Right. So how would you best advise for people to respond in that situation?
So the best question is, how can I help? Uh-huh. And then it may very well be, you know, could you take your jacket off to put under his head? Or can you help me roll him onto his side? Or can you call an ambulance? Might be the answer. Uh-huh. But a lot of times in his case, it was something that would subside by itself. We just had to manage his needs while he was laying down, so he was as comfortable as possible while he was going through his phase.
Right.
So I think it's not freaking out, because the parent's already probably freaking out inside anyway. You don't want to make that worse. Right. So by bringing, you know, a calm question to it, it's like anger. You know, if someone is really, really angry, the best way to help diffuse that anger is get the blood coming to the frontal cortex by asking them a question. Because then they have to stop and think, and it naturally will calm them down. So the same thing applies with when it's an elevated anxiety, right? So that would be my suggestion. The other thing is, you know, really help your children to understand, as you did with those other little kids, that everybody is unique. Everybody has something that is valuable to bring to the conversation. Mm-hmm. And somebody who's not very articulate, it doesn't mean that they're stupid. It just means that they don't necessarily have the words to express what it is that they do. Now, Alex,
in the case of someone with CP, cerebral palsy, have the capacity to bring to the table because they can't articulate well.
Yeah.
What's the disability called of your?
It's global developmental seizures. Yeah. Yeah. So basically, I think it's just a matter of at the end of the day, is asking the parent or asking the helper, you know, how can I help? And then just being guided by that answer. Don't assume. Yeah. Don't just try to jump into action, because, you know, maybe I know that this is something that will pass in 2 minutes. I don't need a $400 ambulance bill. Thank you very much. Right? In that moment. And sometimes you do, you know, when it's going to drag on. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, just hearing you say all that is educational for me. And it brings up a point that I make with both children and adults when I talk about diversity, is that if people see someone who's different, in your case, it's a little bit more anxiety ridden. In my case, this might be a little more some kind of momentary shock or something, that it's for people to know that those responses are completely normal and natural. Mm-hmm. And just like a vase, like this glass is holding the water, we can contain our emotions. So we can have our emotions of freak out, surprise, shock, disgust, whatever the judgment, you know, whatever is happening inside of us, we can have that, but we can contain it inside and not express that to the person or people that are standing up on the other side. And we can smile, we can wave, we can say hi, if nothing else, or can I help? Something like that, right?
Yeah. And asking a question, you know, that is something that's easy to answer, you know, not, you know, because as I said, my focus is on my child at the time. So
Right.
I don't want to go into a long story about, you know, what's wrong.
What's going on right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So keep it. Yeah. So how can I help?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So I am. I know that, you know, certainly with Alex, as you're talking about, you know, visible and non-visible, mm-hmm. How do you think that the uniqueness of what you do contributes to your ability to connect with audiences through your speaking and through your corporate work to help groups understand about diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, right? Well,
I have the big things you teach them, right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I don't need a lot of credibility because they see me walking on stage. I look professional. I look confident. And there's like, oh my God, there's a person who looks, you know, on the bell curve, I am like about a mile out, right? So they're like, in terms of height, they're like, oh my God, there's a person who's really different and she's composed, she's confident. So immediately I get cred for that, just for that, right? Because it, as opposed to, you know, I mean, sometimes it'll be a person that's a different race. They're Asian or they're black or they're Hispanic or something like that. And they'll be there to represent the people of differences. When I come, I'm like way off the bell curve, like I said. So it does hold a little bit more water. And then I think people are just a little bit curious about my situation. And no, I don't think a little bit. I think they're a lot curious about my situation. And when I tell stories like the elevator story or the diamond story, or, you know, I have a repertoire of experiences that I share, right? That they are happy to listen because it's interesting. And for me, when people talk about their difficulties, their challenges, their pain, and they become vulnerable, that this is actually a magic spell that helps open the heart, and people begin to see with their heart and they experience, oh, I know what it's like to not be seen as a respectable person. I know what the pain of not being able to catch the guy I want. I know the pain. You know, people relate. Like, I have my own unique experience, but pretty much everybody else, if you're looking with your, if it opens your heart, you can relate to the person. So I think that that's both of those things are huge pluses. And, the third thing is that I mean, I don't have to fake it. I mean, I've been there. I know what extreme discrimination feels like, tastes like, smells like over years and decades. And I know how much inner work I need to do in order to rise above it and to be greater than my environment. And it's a heck of a lot of work. And I think that also is inspirational for people. And I don't, you know, in my introduction, you said inclusion, empowerment, and awakening. And to me, inclusion and empowerment results in awakening. You can't do any of those without the other. They're all interconnected. So those are some of the things that I think I have as an advantage.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly when it comes to the first point of change, you know, being an executive coach, I know that awareness is the first point of change, right? You know, we don't know what we don't know,
right,
so how can
we
change it, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and obviously in your case, as you say, you have a visible advantage to how the conversation may very well open up. So that credibility piece is huge.
Yeah, I think it elicits immediate respect.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting because when I'm out in the public, it sometimes elicits the exact opposite. So it's very interesting. That's why I wanted to separate them when I gave the answer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So for corporations,
yes,
who want to expand their awareness and be more inclusive, in particular for little people, what are some of the, you know, top few things, four or five things that you share with them?
Okay, well, I'm going to speak about differences in general because little people is only 1 in 50,000. So it's like I said, it's way off the bell curve. And I think that I'm a representative of anybody. It could be a person with a burn on their face, could be a person with a speech impediment, could be a person with, you know, obese. Any of those kind of significant differences, I think that can all be addressed with some of the things that I talk about. And the first one is we are people first. I am first a person and I am second a person with short stature.
Right.
So people first, to recognize that the person in front of you is a person, and even though your conditioning may have told you that something's wrong or you're better than them, something like that, they still have sensitivities, probably even more so than most people, and they still feel hurt and they still need encouragement, and they still need to know they're doing a good job, and they still need feedback to do a better job.
Right.
So all that. Okay, second thing is to move from your head to your heart, like I said, to see if you can incorporate the wisdom of your heart. Heart sees sameness, heart sees the oneness, and just like your ability when you saw me for the first time, there was a moment of, oh my gosh, there's, something I don't see every day. But then there was also this like, oh wow, she's got it going on. She's confident. She's calm. She's present. Like, wow. Right. So I'm assuming, but that's usually what people say. And I pretty much know that about myself. So I would say that, that came from your capacity to have open heart.
Yep.
Right. That you could recognize those beautiful qualities in me and not get stuck in your head about the comparison and the whatever was going on and discriminating or discerning, right? And those are two things. I don't talk about this very much. I told you before that nobody's ever asked me this question before, so I am going to try and find my notes for a minute. Okay, third one is, I know. I like to teach about, in my diversity work, I teach empathy and vulnerability as part of that. And self-compassion is part of that, self-empathy. But I think that it's really helpful when people can, and this is a really act of big courage. This is a big courage, and Brené Brown talks about it in her book, Daring Leadership, mm-hmm. that when you can start to experience and be present with your own difficulties in your own life, that sort of tills the ground for you to be able to be present with people in their difficulty. And you can use that as somebody, maybe they're, it doesn't have to be some kind of big difference. If somebody lost their job or they're getting divorced or their kid got kicked out of school, any normal life situation, that when you have experience, when you let yourself feel your loss, your grief, your frustration, and have times in your day and or in your night or in your weekly process where you actually give yourself time to be with those feelings and journal or punch pillows or talk to a friend or be with yourself and cry, whatever, that it tenderizes the heart and it allows you to be able to really be present with people who are different from you in a very heartful and real way. This is what creates authenticity, and this is what creates connection.
Right.
And it's the main thing, and it's the people that have actually, the more vertical you go with your feelings, the more vertical you can have connection with people. People who are very superficial in their feelings can only have very superficial experiences in relationship, and they're always running around going, where's my next big wow, or where's my next big love affair, or where's my next big whatever. And actually it's just because, and they're always on the search. They're always running because they haven't experienced that vertical dive within themselves. How's that for an answer?
I love that point. I certainly, even as recently as last week, talking to two new coaching clients, I could feel the energetic resonance, and without sharing any names or breaking any confidences around those conversations, just based on their feedback to me, I knew that they knew that I got where they were at, and I could speak to some of the challenges that I had experienced as well as how I'd been able to move past it, mm-hmm. to be able to showcase that. Yeah, I will be a great leader and coach for you because I get it. And I could just feel, the energy. It was, and so could they, which was rather magical. So
beautiful. I'm curious about your biggest challenge. Obviously you have mentioned that you have a son with special needs. And is that been the main challenge in your life, or have there been others?
That was certainly one of the highlights, mm-hmm. Because I consider him to be, certainly a gift and my greatest teacher. And at the same time, I know that I was gifted him because I have a certain amount of resilience already. And, you know, apparently the universe thought that I was the best parent because I could handle him, which some days is debatable.
You're human.
So he's a work in progress, as we all are. The reason that I wrote my book, and you had asked me a little bit about that before we went dived into our interview. So I was passionate about this whole topic of words. I wanted to write a best-selling book. It was on my dream list. And when I thought about, you know, what is it that I know and can have some depth and expertise in, that vertical dive, realized that first off, it was a passion. It was the thing that I had a 92% in one of my highest marks in school before I took my coach designation, where I got 100%. So that was a validation for that.
Double good.
However, it goes back to an experience growing up, which a couple of experiences, one being six and having my father trash one of my pictures, like literally verbally trash it, that he didn't think it was very good. Actually, I think I was five, and the sting of that, because it was an awareness now that I wasn't able to speak up and articulate how I was really feeling about that really, really nasty remark, unkind. When I was 11, though, I flunked my very important exam in England, which determines whether you go to grammar school, which is where the smart kids go, or secondary school, where the not so smart kids go, and I flunked it by 2 marks. And my dad was absolutely furious and screamed at me that I would never, ever be successful in life. Right. Now, he'd already drained the dignity out of my mom by the fact that he was a PTSD survivor coming back from the war. Bullet in Dunkirk grazed him, and he was traumatized. And so he had this very mean streak that he couldn't help. I now know that it's an illness. Right. And I watched him literally drain the dignity right out of my mom. And she became this quiet little mouse who never said a word. And she used to be in business. And I swore that I was never going to be that person. And so when I got the insight for writing the book, it was all about how to help women have more confidence. So it's about using powerful language, using a power of intention, using positive versus negative words, using a collaborative mindset and a kind spirit to negotiate something that both parties want. So it's win-win, not, you know, nailing someone to the wall. And I have a passion for updating the typical sales language. So it's not even about a sale, it's about serving. It's about an invitation. It's beautiful. Very much more stepping into feminine energy.
Yes.
However, using that so that women can be super successful in business because it flourishes. It's not hard work.
Right.
So that's what my book is all about.
That's so beautiful. And it's beautiful to hear you articulate so clearly about how you were stripped of confidence. And I'm sure there were many experiences that you had we might not have time for at this juncture that help you, but the end result is that you're an author, you're an entrepreneur, you're a coach, and that you've actually made that shift, and that it's like confidence is a skill, and we can learn it, and we can step gradually, and we can go in that direction. And I just want to say that for me, it's been that way also, is that confidence is, you know, gradually. And it's so interesting. And I think you would agree with me that, you know, I get to one plateau and then here comes the world, nature, some unobtainable job or object of affection and, you know, smacks you. And then, you know, you're down and then you have to step. And then you're at the next level of, you know, sort of, I'm going to call it embodiment of our own true nature, which is sovereign, which is clear, which is confident, which is naturally exuding radiance of dignity and joy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I realized as I was writing the book, which a lot of it was downloads, because I wrote, you know, from 5:30 till 6:30 in the morning after 20 minutes of meditation and journaling, it was like the words just sort of channeled through me.
Nice.
But what I learned is that the words are very much the external representation of our self-esteem. And yes. So the deeper work that I'm going to be doing more of in the coming years is really peeling back those layers to identify, well, what was it that knocked that self-confidence off track to begin with, and how to retain and sort of pull it back on track. So yeah, it's going to be some interesting times coming up. So
good. Book number two coming up.
Well, it's coming. It's actually going to be another Words, Women and Wisdom book. Uh-huh. This one is going to be oriented more towards leadership. And I think as leaders, you know, we can't show up as confident leaders unless we've done a certain amount of that type of work ourselves. So it all knits together rather nicely.
Well, here's what I think about that. There's false everything. There's false strength. There's false autonomy. There's false merging. There's false whatever. But a false success. There's false and everything. But there's also essential strength and essential compassion and real love and real authenticity. And people can feel the difference. You're not fooling anybody yeah. but yourself. So, you know, and know that the ego's job is to imitate what the real self is. Everybody has an ego. Everybody is challenged with transforming, and this is what my next book is going to be about, transforming that facade of the self of, okay, I'm okay, just as I am, and inside I feel somehow not enough, and actually doing the inner work to dissolve that, which also dissolves that sense of I'm not enough, I'm not acceptable, I'm not lovable, whatever that phrase is for you, and to put somebody back to in touch with their inner diamond, to quote a phrase, and to help them to recognize their true identity, which is divine. And then when they can embody that, then they can make real change in the world, because people easily align with that. People easily get on board with that. People will cooperate. People will express passion around it, and their creativity will just go, you know, genius just starts coming out when they feel safe and when they feel supported. And that's what people with real leadership skills do.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you're talking about that. To grab this book here. So I'm just in the process right now, I just launched it actually, of launching a new book club. So it's an online business book club. And so I'm going to do my book first, because most people who want to be in the book club have probably already got my book, because they've got a head start on it already. But this Becoming Real Journey by David Irvine is actually one of the upcoming books. So I've already selected books for the first 6 months, and then depending on the interest level of the participants, we'll pick out the next six. But they're all going to be around confidence, conversations, communications, connection, whether it's with yourself or with others. So that's the theme.
For Very good. Year. I love that. Where's your book? I thought you said you were going to show your book first.
I'm going to do my book first. So my book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. That's going to be the first book. And then I'm actually going to do Malcolm Gladwell's book. But I have it all listed up on Eventbrite. So if you go to my homepage on my Facebook page, Yvonne Silver 33, there's an invite there to the event. It's the Eventbrite link for Business Book Club, and it's link number 948-23-77-5465. But it is on listed as an event on Facebook. So
very good.
Check that out. That's coming up February 27th in the evening from 7 Mountain Time till 8:30 for an hour and a half. And I know that you also were wanting to share a gift. Something that you have coming up, your Authentic Empowerment Manifesto.
Yes, and that, I don't have a very good photo of it, but this is the picture of it, and it says, authentic empowerment is awakening to who you really are, celebrating your uniqueness, feeling courageous, confident, and clear, valuing your unique gifts and talents, etc. So this is something that you can pin up on your bulletin board. I have mine in my bathroom. So, you know, when I'm sitting there, I have something inspirational to read. And I also, since you were showing your book, I'm going to show my book. This is my book, Walking Tall. And the subtitle is Overcoming Inner Smallness, No Matter What Size You Are. And this is available on Amazon or at my website, Peggy Speaks, peggyspeaks.com. And if in order to get the giveaway, the free giveaway, you could go, if you want that inspirational manifesto, you could go to my website, peggyspeaks.com, and just go to connect with Peggy or whatever it is on that connecting page and send me a note, and I will email and give me your email address. I will send you a copy of that. I don't have it on my website at this moment in time. I'm not a tech person. So anyway, so that's that. And I would love for you to enjoy this. And the last one, the last two are giving yourself permission to be completely awesome, shining your light. So I wish that for all of your beautiful listeners, for all of the amazing, courageous women out there who are finding their inner light and bringing it to the world to pay it forward and to do good and to contribute and to more than anything, enjoy expressing the truth of who they are.
That's lovely. And I'm so glad that you shared your website. So anyone who missed that, that's peggyspeaks.com. And Peggy is a beautiful soul in a small stature and big in personality. So if you've been intrigued by the work she's doing for diversity inclusion as well, feel free to reach out for her. I'm so happy that we got to connect today, Peggy.
Yes, and if anybody's working in an organization where they need some support to bring the culture to a little bit more open-mindedness, open-heartedness, inclusion, any of that, please reach out and have conversation. I can, you know, help identify maybe some weak points, some things where I might be able to help or direct you to someone who can.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all about enhancements, and
that'd be so great.
Yeah, certainly that is a very, very important in the work that I'm doing around women, inclusiveness, diversity. And I think, you know, we've moved past this mindset of tolerance, and now we're moving into acceptance and the benefit.
My program is called Celebrating Differences. So I go tolerance, acceptance, celebrating.
Celebrating. Love it. Okay. Yeah. Well, listen, I will let you run for today. Thank you so much for sharing your insights, your wisdom, your story, your gifts with the listeners. If they missed it, there will be a replay, and I will put those links that you've referred to on the replay connection piece as well, so that people can continue to keep in touch.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you so much, Peggy.
It's been an honor to be with you. I've learned so much, and it's been such a joy to share and be with you and your loving, beautiful container.
Thank you for having a beautiful day. Bye for now.